I'm Tanya Tetlow. I'm a professor at Tulane Law School and director of the Domestic Violence Clinic.
What trend do you seem to be noticing around convictions of women in murder cases?
Well, not in murder cases generally, but in cases where women have killed their abusers, there's a historical trend that they fail in their attempts to argue self-defense and that they often get higher sentences than men who kill their wives on average.
And can you give an example of a case like this where this has happened and any sense of why this might be happening?
In 2009, there were three murder cases I noticed that went to Orleans Parish Criminal Court. One was a woman who had evidence that she fought over a gun with her husband who had beaten her for many, many years. The gun went off, he died, and she was convicted of second-degree murder, meaning life without parole. And there were two men tried for murder. One beat his girlfriend to death with a banister and was able to argue self-defense for that. And the second man who killed his ex-girlfriend's male friend, not even a new boyfriend, and argued manslaughter because she supposedly so riled him up by being seen with another man after they had broken up that he was able to get manslaughter. So those are the kinds of examples of what happened. And as to why, it's a combination of things. But one is the definition of self-defense is fairly narrow. It's about are you in imminent danger at that moment? And a lot of that comes back to the notion of whether we think women who are being battered have the ability to get out of their situation, and it's just a question of running away at any moment over the years, or whether we understand that they really are trapped by forces that nobody could get out of, even if you were in their shoes.
Is this something that you're just seeing here in New Orleans or in Louisiana? Is it something that you're seeing nationally?
It's a national problem. It's definitely not just here. The National Council Against Domestic Violence did a study that said that women who kill their husbands, and that will include people acting in self-defense and obviously people not acting in self-defense, but on average, women who kill their husbands get sentences of about 15 years on average, and men who kill their wives get sentences of 3 to 5 years. So it is a major disparity. And given that probably more of the women convicted of killing their husbands were actually acting in self-defense than the men. That would be typical of the sort of how domestic violence breaks down. That's even more startling.
You were saying that the whole context of domestic violence makes it actually really hard for women to leave and escape this person. Can you talk a little bit about that and how that plays into these, you know, murder cases?
It is not true that you can just call the police and the problem is solved. If you call the police, they may or may not make an arrest of him. They may well make an arrest of you after you get falsely accused of having done the violence yourself. If he is arrested, he'll often be released right away on no bond or very little bond. If he is at all prosecuted, the DA will be asking you to risk your life to go forward when it's probably charged as a misdemeanor and he's unlikely to get anything more than sentenced to a treatment class that statistically is incredibly unlikely to work. And even if he doesn't show up to it, probably nothing will happen. So it's not true that if you call the police somehow there will be an armed guard posted at your door to keep him away forevermore. So a lot of women are trapped just because the batterer will say to them, if you try to leave me, and that's the ultimate threat to his authority, if you leave me, then I will track you down and find you and kill you, and all you have to do is open the newspaper to know that that is often true. And the second thing that really traps women that's overlooked is custody. So if there are children involved, she faces a Sophie's choice between escaping herself, which maybe she could manage to do alone, versus trying to take the kids. And at that point, he will have threatened to her, you know, you can leave, but I'm going to keep these kids. And the family law system is such that batterers are much more likely than good fathers to fight for custody for all the wrong reasons, and they're much more likely, shockingly, to win custody than good fathers are. And so it is a very serious threat that he will get custody, or even if he doesn't, that he's going to have unsupervised visitation, that he'll have access to the kids. And so for those reasons alone, to say nothing about money, emotional manipulation, all the other things that go into it, it's very hard to get out. And it would be very hard for any of us to get out if we were in those shoes.
So it seems to me this actually fits into a much bigger context in terms of gender roles and expectations and stereotypes and other gender-related norms. Have you thought about that at all? Is that something that plays into your work at all?
It is. I mean, I think when we look at the problem of domestic violence internationally, we're much more willing to see that. So we don't ask, for example, of women in Pakistan, why do they stay? We understand that there are very few options for them. We understand that the government is kind of complicit in not enforcing laws against violence and keeping them trapped. But here, where we have rates of domestic violence that are still shocking, you know, they're not quite as high as some parts of the world, but they're up there. We see it as this aberrant behavior. It has nothing to do with gender and power and the power of women to get protection from the law. And so I think that's a real issue. But yes, every day that the work we do in the clinic and the courts, we're up against gendered stereotypes of who domestic violence victims are, who perpetrators are, and it becomes a real issue. And it's a terrible issue even for men who are victims of domestic violence, because there's this assumption that men can protect themselves and that women aren't violent. You know, all of those gender norms hurt both genders, but they're particularly difficult for women who find themselves stuck and are made to be stereotyped as fickle, as masochist, as sort of hysterical liars. Those stereotypes are very powerful within the judicial system.
You talked about women's inability to get protection from the law. And can you talk about, you know, how that, I mean, you've sort of talked about how it plays out, but can you talk a little bit about why that may be happening?
Well, the people who make up the criminal justice system and the family law system are all human beings within our culture, from judges to cops to juries. And they share all the same stereotypes that we have. And there's not been a massive effort to re-educate people. It takes a lot of money to do training, so you have to constantly do it. But if you look around at our culture, we think of domestic violence maybe not as something that's permissible, but as something that's kind of funny, that we don't take very seriously, that's mocked as, you know, something that will always exist in the world and is not that big a deal. And that is a pretty powerful mechanism to make sure that the problem continues to exist, is when we laugh at it.
My suspicion is that it's not just related to the issue of domestic violence, but that there are bigger issues at play. Is that true? And if so, what are they?
Well, historically, in the U.S. and the countries from which our law comes, it was legal to beat your wife because it was a form of discipline. And so the expression, the rule of thumb, actually comes from the idea that you couldn't beat your wife with a switch wider than your thumb. And that changed in the 19th century, but we still do have a notion that that men are in charge of the family and that they are absolutely allowed to discipline their wife, as we still believe about kids and the ability to use physical punishment of children. We used to feel that way about wives, and many people still do. And so at its core, this is about power within the family and power over women. And as long as that continues, then gender and power is just at the root of all of this. And ultimately, women can only go so far when there's still the threat of violence against them, whether that's sexual assault and rape, but also domestic violence. And lest this seem peripheral to the fate of women, the CDC estimates that 1 out of 4 American women will be beaten by a partner in their lifetime. And about 1 out of 6 will be raped or sexually assaulted. So it's a significant issue, and the shadow of it, the threat of it, hangs over every woman's life.
there have obviously been victories for women over the last, 100 years, like winning the right to vote, greater access to sexual freedom because of birth control, winning elected office, et cetera, et cetera. So, obviously these are things that were won. So what kinds of things are going on to try and change what's happening in terms of domestic violence?
There have been a lot of efforts in the last couple of decades, it's all pretty recent, to change the laws first, to things like mandatory arrest statutes to force the police to intervene when they wouldn't before. There's a federal statute called the Violence Against Women Act that was primarily authored by then Senator Joe Biden. So this is his pet project, and he's made it a very big issue for this White House as well. Federal government can only do so much, but they provided a lot of funding for state and local governments to pay attention to it and funded a lot of legal clinics like ours at Tulane is funded by the Justice Department. All of that has mattered enormously, and I think as a curious sign, the murder rate has dropped significantly since the 90s. But what's interesting about that is it's the domestic murder rate of men has plummeted. The murder rate of women as victims has stayed about the same. But what seems to be happening is that women are much less likely to kill in self-defense or, ultimately kill an abuser when they have other options, when there are legal ways to get out and to get help. And so ironically, the batterers are much less likely to be murdered than they used to be or killed in self-defense. But we're still not getting far enough in protecting their victims from being killed and their children.
And that's obviously sort of a legislative remedy. It's not a grassroots remedy. So is there anything happening in terms of a more community-based or grassroots-based effort in this sense?
Well, it absolutely. I think ultimately, though, the strongest issue is cultural and societal and changing those attitudes. And I end up telling my law students that as much as I hope that they can do a lot of good through the law, and I've tried to my whole career, that the people who decide what's on television and what goes in movie videos and song lyrics end up with a lot more power over the rate of domestic violence than any of us will ever have.
Is there a connection to this kind of pressure in terms of women's reproductive choices and independence to the domestic violence situation, or are they sort of just completely separate?
The fact that birth control is even seen primarily through the lens of a women's issue, I think, is as much a function of the fact that we want to put all of that obligation and reputation onto women as opposed to understanding that men have sex too, that women don't do that alone. So I think that's related, and it becomes part of the control of women. One thing that I find strange sometimes is that we don't pay more attention to the violent control of women through murder and disfigurement and rape and beatings, and instead focus seemingly most of our attention on women's issues, on issues of reproduction, which are very important. But in the process, I think we're missing the forest for the trees. In particular, because I think there's a lot of agreement that could be found with the right and the left. There's a way to pitch this as a family values issue, as an anti-crime issue, that would get a lot of traction, particularly on the right, but instead it just gets ignored.
Could you talk more about how you would pitch it if you were going to present dealing with domestic violence as an anti-crime issue?
I think it becomes important to make clear that this is not about attacking men, that the vast majority of men would never lay a hand on a woman, or anyone else for that matter, that it's insulting to men to think otherwise, that this is about figuring out why batterers behave the way they do, that that's really the focus, that this is about making sure that a percentage of the population doesn't destroy families, because violence absolutely does, and then it becomes a cycle of creating new perpetrators and new victims, and that we end violent crime. And I find myself sometimes arguing less about the impact of domestic violence on the women who are being beaten and more about the peripheral effects of that, because just in case, you know, people don't actually care about the women being beaten, as they often don't. This is the kind of crime that spawns all other violent crime. So you are going to be hard pressed to find too many men populating Angola who did not grow up in a violent household, watching domestic violence, probably experiencing the connected problem of child abuse, and as a result grew up to be abusers themselves, most likely, but also armed robbers or bank robbers or whoever else. And so that's one way to try to get people to care.
It occurs to me as well that there's not only just a question of, you know, batterers having some sort of dysfunctional issue, but also women or men who put themselves in those situations and don't proactively figure out, okay, what can I do?
It becomes important, I think, to help people identify red flags and try to avoid it, because when you're stuck, it really is difficult to get out. But ultimately, this is the ultimate recidivist crime. These guys move on to the next victim. And so if every person in a violent relationship left their abuser tomorrow, within a year, the rate of domestic violence would be exactly the same.
Okay. Is there anything you'd like to add or anything that I've missed that we should cover?
I just think that domestic violence is kind of the civil rights issue of our era, that we're talking about more than 1,300 murders a year in this country alone. We're talking about egregious levels of violence, which have horrific impact on the women who suffer them and kids and some men who suffer it too. And a society that doesn't much concern itself with that. And I think understanding that this is a civil rights issue along with a crime issue and a family issue is key. And it'll be the thing that our grandkids look back at us and wonder why we didn't care more about it.